Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey-yo, 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 hey-yo. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey-hey-yo, hey-yo, hey-yo, hey-yo. And all living creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey-hey-yo, hey-yo, hey-yo, hey-yo. We are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be, and we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, surroundings, take care to care. We are here to love ourselves, to love one another, to love our surroundings, to love, to love, to love. Nahastan aniva nijane go shabothya, nijane go shabothya. Hey, hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo.
Akwe, greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending native lands and indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations.
Why are our history books so full of lies, when no word is spoken of why the Indian dies and dies and dies? Well, that the Chicana loves the California land. Do our books all say it was discovered by one white man? Well, that's just a lie, one of the many, and we've had plenty. I don't want more of the same. No more genocide in my name. Oh, why are the weapons of the war so young? Why are there only rich ones around when it's done? Why are so many of the soldiers black or brown? Do we think it's because they're good at cutting other people down? the light. One of the many, and we've had plenty. I don't want more of the same. No more genocide in my name. Nazi forces grow again. Ignorance gives them a place. The Klan is teaching children to hate the human race. Where once there was a playground, now an MX missile plant. Do they think it's fun and games to see just how much we can stand? People die around the world from starvation and grief all the time. Some folks try to avoid the truth by saying God and gun will provide. In Rome, in Cape Town, in Beirut, San Salvador, Greensboro, Belfast, Manila, and many more. It's a crime. Do we think the fascist right will save the world in time? They try to tell us all. We've got to tell them no. It's all a lie. One of the many, and we've had plenty. I don't want more of the same. No more genocide. No, 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 no. No more genocide. No, no. No more genocide.
Ashkwe, greetings and hello everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, broadcast here on Global Community Radio Station, Radio for Peace International. That song was entitled No More Genocide in My Name, from the classic tune from singer-songwriter Holly Near. We featured that song as an honor to today's program guest, Holly Rowan. That song for peace and justice exemplifies the spirit of my friend who is here in the studio. Holly has devoted her life to peace, to human rights, and social justice. She is a strong defender of the environment. As a professional nurse and midwife, Holly is well respected in the field of health and women's rights. She has been a peace warrior on the front lines for many, many years. Some of our worldwide listeners may know about Holly from her 1980s anti-war activism against United States intervention in what's now called Central America. In 1987, while protesting at the U.S. Naval Weapons infamous facility, Port Chicago, her ex-husband Brian Wilson lost his legs when he was run over by a military weapons supply train at that California base. As many listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio know, in the 1980s, I also was deeply involved against the U.S. war in Central America and helped co-sponsor one of the first Mayan Indians to be granted sanctuary by a Native American tribal nation. I was a journalist covering the war in Abiyala, the indigenous name of this region, more commonly called Central America. At that time, I had the honor to visit a number of indigenous communities in each Central American country, until a brutal situation against Mayan Indians in Guatemala, which I exposed, got me expelled from the region. Upon my return to the U.S., I did hear about what happened to Brian, and so I am indeed privileged to now be friends with our dear sister, Holly. I am very, very honored to call her my friend. She is a sister in what I term the Earth Justice Movement, the worldwide grassroots intercultural movement to fight against globalization and fight for the well-being of all life on Mother Earth. This is at the heart of what we here at Yat Kiddushi Native Center is also dedicated to. I met Holly at a 2003 Earth Charter Forum that I spoke at. I knew then that we would become friends and would work together in future community actions for Earth justice. This past year, the Great Spirit gifted us an opportunity to come together with other fine community activists to form the Southwest Florida Coalition for Progressive Television. Our TV program entitled Interconnections serves to inform, educate, and enlighten our viewers about important issues of our times. The vision and mission of our TV coalition is very, very special. I wish to read some excerpts from our brochure and websites, since these statements very well express a philosophy that I know Holly and us here at Yad Kiddushi Native Center believe in. The mission statement of Interconnections. The Southwest Florida Coalition for Progressive Television believes that many of the complex and diverse problems facing the world today stem from our mistreatment of one another and of our planet. These problems can be resolved peacefully and ethically with informed and democratic decision-making. Our weekly show, Interconnections, will remind viewers that the world consists of one people sharing common goals, to live in peace with one another and to care for our planet and our young. War and violence are not valid solutions to the problems facing humanity. All of life is interconnected. Peace is the answer. Realizing this interconnectedness of all living creatures is the way. Our vision statement reads, "The Southwest Florida Coalition for Progressive Television is concerned about the direction our society has been moving. We believe it is time to move in a different direction. Life on Earth is at a critical point. Our future and our planet's well-being depend upon what type of society we humans choose to create. Our coalition is concerned about cultural, environmental, social justice, economic, health, and peace issues. Interconnections will highlight these and other themes while providing local, national, and international perspectives. The Southwest Florida Coalition for Progressive Television serves as a voice for those not often heard. Our weekly show, Interconnections, will also provide you with the news and information you need to make a difference. The coalition also wants to hear from you. Please send us your comments and suggestions. And finally, the goals of the Southwest Florida Coalition for Progressive Television are to inform, educate, and enlighten our viewers about the important issues of our time, to motivate people to work for change, to provide a public forum for progressive voices, for change to be heard in our communities. Well, dear friends, there are many other highlights I could mention as an introduction to our special guest, Holly, here, but I will defer to Holly to tell us more about herself and some of the wonderful things that has been a part of her life. Let me just reiterate that we of Yad Kiddushi Native Center are honored to share friendship and the important work of Earth Justice with her. Welcome, Holly, to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices.
Thank you. My name is Holly Rowan. There's lots of ways I identify myself. I'm a midwife. I've been a midwife for many years, starting with the birth of my son at home in 1973. Late 60s and early 70s, I was a peace activist, and I married a Mexican-American man who burned his draft card, and the FBI persecuted us, so we became expatriates for a while, and I went down to Mexico and lived in Mexico. So that's sort of where I began with my peace activism, was actually becoming an expatriate. When I became pregnant with my son, I returned to the United States, and I've had many journeys ever since then, and became a active politically again in the 80s during the time of the Contra War and the times of U.S. intervention in Central America. And I married a second husband, Brian Wilson. Some of you may have heard about him. We organized a group of veterans and peace activists in Concord, California at the Concord Naval Weapons Station, and he was brutally run over by a train and lost both his legs then. So that thrust me personally into an even more international peace activism. During the repercussions of that, I came to terms with my own sexuality. began to identify as a lesbian, and that was really a real turning point for me in my spirituality and my activism too, because it was kind of like I was partially standing on my head beforehand, and all of a sudden I was on my feet again. So I remained active as for women's health rights, and then again when we plunged into the Middle East, the war in Iraq, I became active again as a peace activist. But it wasn't until I returned to where I came to Florida to live where I really started caring a lot more about what's happening to Mother Earth. And I became much more involved with the global issues of globalization and seeing how that directly related to the indigenous peoples, all of us, all over the planet, was causing slavery and more of the rape of our planet. So I become much more active in the last year, not only as an activist in the streets, but also on a more spiritual level. I've always identified as a pagan, and I've considered myself a priestess of the goddess. But during the last year, I hooked up with other pagans, and we started weaving our magic into our street activism. So, to make a long story short, I consider myself a magical activist.
Holly, as I listened to your first self-introduction, I was thinking about the beauty of indigenous cultures throughout the world, in that we as Native people honor continual growth of spirit, continual growth of people, and it's very difficult as a Native person, so-called Native man, sometimes to talk with what we say in my language, Piscataquis, people from across the waters, more commonly translated as Euro-Americans or white people, because that so-called society seems to be so stagnant and so imprisoning that they don't really let people grow into whom they are and change, and yet in indigenous cultures that's very much honored. So I appreciate a lot of your personal growth in spirit and as a woman as well, because really in our way of thought, women are warriors in the true sense of the word. The word warrior, in my language we say kwana, really means to be very serious and committed in defense of Mother Earth and all the relations. We say kinanwantakwasin. It doesn't mean to have any kind of hatred or violence. It means to really love and defend what is sacred, and that goes to Mother Earth and one's family as well. I would like to reintroduce the subject of your husband, Brian Wilson. One of the subjects, I don't like the word issue so much, but one of the subjects that Yakidishi Native Center has talked about for over 20 years is this connection between peace and militarization in America and in the West. And of course, for Native people, we are directly victims of it. Much of the weaponry, especially nuclear, the materials have come from Native land, mining of uranium. Of course, the testing of weapons in the area we call Nui Sogabia, more commonly known as the Western Shoshone Territory, American people call Nevada, is something that Yakidishi Native Center deals a lot about. I could go into so many other things, the uranium mining and waste on Dene Navajo and Hopi in Pueblo territories in the southwest. The point I'm making is the uranium fuel cycle begins primarily on indigenous peoples throughout the land, throughout the world. My spirit wife, Betty, who's not here, is actually still in what's now called Australia, and she's been looking into some of the issues there with uranium mining in Aboriginal lands. And, of course, the testing of nuclear weapons and military, of course, is another example of victimization of how colonial governments like the United States, like France, Great Britain, have so-called tested nuclear weapons on Native lands and have forced people, like, for example, the Bikini Atoll people in the South Pacific off their sacred lands and who are very contaminated. So I could go on for a long time, as our listeners know, but I'm always very much proud of our American brothers and sisters who are on the front lines of peace and justice in the anti-military campaign. And I know your husband and yourself have been very much involved. Would you share more personal insight into that?
Thank you. You kind of brought tears to my eyes when you mentioned the uranium mining and the Shoshone sacred land, because I was just reminiscing with my partner Liz here a few days ago with a lot of tears in my eyes, the times where I've walked out into the desert there and been arrested at the Nevada test site. And so it's really been on my mind the last few days, very much. But I'll back up a little bit and talk a little bit about my former husband and still my dear friend, Brian. I met him in Managua, Nicaragua, in the mid-80s. Before that, I had been kind of happily going along for quite a few years with my comfortable lifestyle, practicing midwifery in Northern California, in Marin County. And someone came into my living room one day and they showed a film of all of the indigenous peoples in Honduras, in El Salvador, and Nicaragua that were in camps that had been driven off of their land because of the United States intervention into each of those countries in order to plunder their natural resources. And I got struck really deeply, so I ended up going down to Nicaragua with a group of healthcare workers. And that's where I met Brian. And he was there with a couple of other Vietnam vets that had the year before, out of act of conscience, started a 40-day fast on the steps of the Capitol in Washington, D.C., to try and bring the awareness of the American people to the facts about U.S. intervention in Central America and to remind us that it was very much like what happened in Vietnam. And these veterans did not want to have the same kind of militarization repeated again and not in their names as veterans. So when Brian and I met, there was something electric that happened between us. We saw a partnership, and we were especially moved by the fact that there were all these beautiful, loving people that we met and made friends with in the roads, in the country roads of Nicaragua, and the roads were mined with American-made landmines, and that there was white phosphorus rockets there that burn like napalm, and those were all supplied by the United States. And then those facts had been trying to be hidden by our government from the American people. So we organized a group of veterans called the Veterans Peace Action Teams, and we started to bring them down into the roads. And we walked, I walked with them. The first walk we did a walk that was 120 kilometers from central Nicaragua all the way up to a town called Huiruli, which was at the Nicaraguan-Honduran border. And we walked on landmine roads with the people. And we rode in the trucks with them, and we decided that if we could create a high visibility of North Americans and veterans that should be respected, that they were willing to put their lives on the lines to bring our awareness, to stop that kind of insanity, that something would happen. And so that's kind of where we started. That's where Brian and I met. We got married, and our marriage vows, they weren't about loving and honoring and obeying each other. They were about loving and honoring the earth and committing our lives together as partners to work for justice and to be willing to do whatever it took. So that's where I really plunged back into my anti-war activism. Well, I've been on the road ever since, I must say. It was really heartbreaking to, after the Contra War was ended and Iran-Contra hearings, what happened to Brian was that, and it's kind of ironic because what moved us on those roads were all of the amputees that we visited because their legs had been blown off by landmines supplied by our government. And so we decided to go to the source. And where we lived in Northern California, there is a naval weapons station that also, I believe, was once on some sacred land from the, I believe, the Miwok tribes were there. There actually are nuclear bunkers there, and they were shipping out the white phosphorus rockets and the landmines from the Concord Naval Weapons Station and putting them on ships and taking them down to Central America. They also, just for our information now, those ships go from the port Chicago. From that port, they go out to the whole Pacific Rim, shipping weapons. There's a long history, a long, dirty history there. But we decided to start a blockade of those trains, to stop the trains carrying the weapons to the harbor, to ship them down to Central America. And with a lot of preparation, the idea was to start another fast, a 40-day fast with prayer, and that certain people would actually do a traditional blockade. We fully expected for the actual blockaders on the tracks to be arrested and to take into jail where they intended to continue their fast. We notified all the authorities, not only the police and the sheriff's department and the highway patrol, but from the Pentagon all the way down and to the captains of the Air Force base. But on the first day of the action, on September 1st in 1987, they ran the weapons train 3 times the speed limit into the protesters, and Brian was in the very middle of them, and they just brutally ran us over. And he didn't have time to get out of the way, and perhaps he didn't even want to. He doesn't remember, quite honestly, but he did not get out of the way in time, and he was run over by the train and consequently lost both of his legs.
The so-called Department of Energy and Department of Transportation, what, if anything, has been done so-called legally? Has Brian been able to get medical help, and has he been able to get any compensation from that incredible action?
Well, ironically enough, not long after that happened, by the way, he was almost miraculously recovered. He's a double amputee below the knees, and 30 days after he was run over by the train, the day he was released from the hospital, he went directly back to the tracks and walked there on his new prosthesis. He always has had a very loving and forgiving attitude, and immediately felt compassion for the drivers of the train who were employees of the Naval Weapons Station. And, ironically enough, those train drivers who he felt compassion and forgiveness for turned around and tried to sue him and us for causing them emotional distress. We actually then decided to bring a lawsuit against not the train drivers only, but against those who gave them their orders from higher up. Meanwhile, there was an investigation that went to the House Armed Services Committee. To make a long story short, at some point, we decided to settle with the Navy, with the Naval Weapons Station, out of court. And so there was a settlement for about $1 million. All of his medical expenses were covered. Many people also sent in a lot of donations that helped with the most initial. And whatever money was left over to that, after a large sum went to the lawyers, of course, has helped Brian to continue to do his work, which was writing and traveling and speaking for a long time. Now he lives in Northern California, and he's decided to completely boycott fossil fuels so he doesn't travel anymore. He has 2 vehicles. He grows all his own food, his organic food, with his partner now that he's with. And he drives a truck that's fueled by vegetable oil, and also has an electric car and a bicycle that he works by his hands.
I'm your masters of war, you that build all the guns, you that build the death planes, you that build the big bombs, you that hide behind walls, you that hide behind desks. I just want you to know we can see through your masks. You that never done nothing but build to destroy. You play with my world like it's your little toy. You put a gun in my hand, then you hide from my eyes, and you turn and run farther when the fast bullets fly. You fasten their triggers for others to fire, then you sit back and watch while the death count gets higher. You hide in your mansions while young people's blood flows out of their bodies and is buried in the mud. Let me ask you one question. Is your money that good? Will it buy you forgiveness? Do you think that it could? For the suffering you to die. And your death will come soon. I'll follow your casket on a pale afternoon. I'll watch while you're lost into the deathbed. Then I'll dance on your grave till I know that you're dead.
Aho, Tabakni, we say thank you in my language, and again, it's a very fine privilege for us here at Yad Kiddushi Native Center to have you here today and to share your personal thoughts and insights and experiences. And when you were talking about the U.S. Navy, especially out in California, I was just kind of thinking in my own head, my own experience fighting the U.S. Navy with respect to their impact on our relatives, the cetaceans, the whales, as it's called in English, dolphins and whales, and our relatives in the ocean from being impacted from naval sonar and from just the amount of ship traffic in the oceans. It's really disrupted the ability of our relatives, the whales and dolphins and other marine life, from being able to communicate with one another and to survive. And out in the Pacific Ocean, my cousins, as we say, the native people of what's now called Hawaii and Micronesia and Polynesia, who are very much centered on the ocean and knowledge of the impacts to the U.S. Navy, has been atrocious, really, all over the world. And this one example is just one of many. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Native Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yad Kiddushi Native Center. We're here in a very beautiful sunny afternoon in Pahayogi, Southwest Florida, in our home studio here. And I'm very happy to be speaking with a new friend of mine. Holly, as you hear, is a peace and social justice environmental activist. I would use the word earth warrior as a compliment. When you were talking about what's now called Central America, indigenous peoples there, whom I know call Central America Abiyala, and I hate English because it's a very colonial language, and names of English places do not honor either the people here, there, or the natural world spirits there as well, so I will use Abiyala. You're talking specifically about the Suma Rama Mosquito peoples, who are indigenous, and you might not know this, but I had the honor as a native journalist to cover the wars of Central America based in Guatemala in the 1980s until I was thrown out of there by the U.S. ambassador. And later I'll tell you that personal story, which is both humorous but also exemplifies the colonialism of the United States government. But would you mind sharing any personal thoughts you had about the people that you were among, and if you were among any of the Mosquito or Suma or Rama peoples, as well as the local, quote, peasant people? I really hate that word, too, because really the people of what's now called Central and South America, those who identify themselves as Spanish-speaking people, many really are indigenous. They just have been colonized since the conquistadors and really haven't had the opportunity to continue their traditions. But anyway, would you talk a little bit about your personal experience with the people who are now called Central Americans?
Thank you for bringing that up. I did have the privilege to spend quite a bit of time on the Mosquito Coast, and I did spend time with the Rama and the Suma people and the Mosquitoes. I had a friend, his nom de guerre was Rafiga. He's a very good friend of mine, and others there on that coast. The last time I was there, I was an observer of the elections in 1990, and it was a very moving experience to be with all the native peoples as they went and voted. It was unfortunate to see the intimidation that happened to those people on their way to the polls and the weeks and the months beforehand. Because even though we did see one vote for one person happened, the story that went before that was really, really, really sad. But I felt very, very welcome everywhere I went in Nicaragua. The people that were clinging to their indigenous ways, had much to teach and many gifts that I feel like they gave me. But it's much more on a personal level that I can hardly speak of. It was one of the deepest experiences of my life, to be welcomed as a sister and a warrior, as you said, as a fellow warrior. And indeed, my friend Rafaga's name, Rafaga, means ratatat, of gunfire. And so as a nonviolent activist, it was really educational for me to be a part of a revolutionary movement in that country. I'm an honorary Sandinista myself, and it was a very hopeful time, especially during the 80s, before we undermined the Sandinista government, because there was really the power of the people happening then, and the women's movement was very, very strong. And what brought me there in the first case was I came as a part of a group called the Committee for Health Rights in Central America. And so some of the indigenous teachers I had were the midwives, and we had a lot to share, and we continue that exchange, the midwives in North America with the midwives throughout the Americas since that time. I don't know what's happened in the last few years on the Atlantic coast, but I think that a lot has deteriorated, and there's still a lot being organized as far as education and health care and jobs for all the people there.
Thank you.
traditional marimba music from the Mayan band Marimba Alma Chapina. Following Holly's comments about protesting the Concord Naval Base weapons train incident with their former husband and peace activist, Brian Wilson, we shared a song from the All People Singers entitled Masters of War from their Songs of Struggle album. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat Kedishi Native Center. We are broadcasting on Radio for Peace International. RFPI is Global Community Radio. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. In the studio today, I have the pleasure to be talking with peace, environmental, and social justice activist, Holly Rowan. Holly, as you were sharing some of your experiences in Abiyala, what's now called Central America, as well as some of your experience with your peace activism, I was thinking about different movements throughout the world who have long histories of struggle for justice. As listeners to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices know, we at Yat Kedishi Native Center fight for social and economic justice, for the environment, for Indigenous people's sovereignty and self-determination, for the rights of women and children, and fight against globalization and militarization as important examples. There have been times for me in the past 30-plus years where my activism has had some great personal threats. My next question to you is about the serious issue of how activism can be very risky and even dangerous. For example, in the 1970s, living in Southeast Asia, I was deeply involved in fighting World Bank, International Monetary Fund funded mega projects such as the planned Chico River Dam project in what's now called the Philippines. This hydro dam project threatened the lands and tribal culture of Kalinga Apayao peoples I had the honor to live with in their mountain provinces. In the Philippines, Malaysia, Indonesia, and Thailand, I fought against logging and mining interests, which sometimes meant confronting both industry and government. In the mid-1980s, there were times as a Native American journalist in what's now called Central America, I was harassed by so-called police and security forces, as well as by U.S. Embassy folks, for my honest and factual reports on the United States-backed intervention in war in Central America. As many listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio have heard, I was expelled from the region by a U.S. ambassador. Anyway, my question to you, Holly, have you and other peace and justice activists been threatened? I have known a number of people who have taken part in peace and justice delegations in a number of so-called third world countries whose presence has always not been so welcome by either that host country or United States officials. What has been your experiences or any thoughts on this?
That's actually a good question. I spent a lot of time mostly outside of the U.S. Embassy in Managua during the 80s protesting. I also spent a lot of time inside with similar pictures, probably photographs of victims that have been tortured by the Contras, also from El Salvador. The difference in being in a U.S. Embassy at the time in the 80s between being in a U.S. Embassy, say, in El Salvador or in Guatemala from in Nicaragua is that our host government welcomed us there with open arms and really wanted our presence. I was with Brian Wilson and with Duncan Murphy, who was a World War II veteran, Charlie Lipke, who received a Purple Heart, I believe, in Vietnam. He was a chaplain at the time, a Catholic priest. I was with them, and we were very, very high profile. And so when we went into the embassy, we were told things were tranquilo, too, and that we were misinformed, that we were sadly misinformed as to what was really going on and that we should mind our own business. But they couldn't throw us out of the country. Now, when we were outside of the embassy protesting, we had many, many, many vigils in front of the U.S. Embassy with not just Americans, North Americans, and Nicaraguans, and refugees from both Guatemala and Honduras and El Salvador that were taking refuge in Nicaragua at the time. We were followed and photographed a lot by different agents, probably from the CIA, it's hard to say, different agencies. The problem that we had was actually back in the United States. During, I think, right around 1988, we found out through an investigative reporter that was working with us that Oliver North and his cronies had put together what they called the domestic terrorist list. And we were placed on the domestic terrorist list. And as a matter of fact, there were memos that were somehow connected with the Pentagon during the time that were going around, especially about Brian and the other veterans. And this all happened right before he was run over by the train. So we see a connection, definitely, with what happened. And I truly believe that they tried to kill us at that time on the tracks. After that time, we were under surveillance for a lot of time that I could notice. Probably I'm under surveillance now, but the truth is, and it's what we said back then as well as now, is we have nothing to hide. We're nonviolent activists. Supposedly, this is a free country where we have rights, our First Amendment rights, our Fifth Amendment rights, and they are really being eroded right now because of the Patriot Act, which I believe now, today, this day, the 23rd, they're trying to push through Congress, Patriot Act number 3. So, with our new Homeland Security, I think that that domestic terrorist list has probably grown a whole lot. Yeah, I haven't had problems traveling and flying in and out of the country. Other people I know definitely have. We just even heard about Cat Stevens, who, you know, was a folk singer who joined Islam probably 2 decades ago and changed his name, was not allowed in the country yesterday. And so I think we're going to see a whole lot more of this kind of oppression. We certainly have seen this kind of oppression, those of us even in the last year that have been protesting in the streets or since 9-1-1. So in the name of security, where I'm watching our civil rights really being eroded, and I really do fear for our future, very much so. So I was treated very well. In my host country, I have spent time in Guatemala and in El Salvador a little bit, and time in Mexico, and have had a much harder time in those countries, like you said, but I haven't been dragged out. I might have been if my skin was a darker color. It's hard to say.
Yeah.
American drum music from Dakota Traveler Singers from their Arbor Records and CD entitled Dakota Travels, recorded live at the Prairie Island Reservation. That particular honor song was a victory song honoring our relatives from the Little Bighorn battles. And of course, that was another war by the United States at another time and place against our Indian peoples. Well, dear friends, we're nearing the end of our broadcast time together for this edition of Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. And I really want to thank my guest today, Holly. She's someone who's devoted herself to peace, to human rights and social justice, protection of the environment. She's a professional nurse and midwife, well-respected in the fields of health and women's rights, and as you've heard, has been a peace warrior on the front lines for many, many years, and I'm very honored to have her as my friend, and we will continue our conversation in Program 2 next week of our interview with Holly Rowan. Well, dear friends, we're, as I said, about out of time. I want to conclude with an honor song to our Native American political prisoner, our brother Leonard Peltier. This song from Dennis Banks, a co-founder of the American Indian Movement CD, Still Strong, features this Leonard Peltier honor song. And I really always want to encourage our worldwide listeners to keep involved in the effort to free our brother Leonard Peltier. You can find out more information directly from the International Leonard Peltier Defense Committee website, www.freeleonardpeltier.org. And of course, in future broadcasts, as always, we'll be giving you more updates and ways in which you can help support freedom for our brother Leonard Peltier. Well, until the next Wolf Mountain Native Radio, this is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker, thanking you for listening to Radio for Peace International. RFPI is Global Community Radio. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Aho, Kinawamutakwasin, to all of our relations.
Oh, Belgium, there is a radio station working for a better world. Social justice and human rights. Independent broadcasting 24 hours a day. Radio for Peace International, Costa Rica. We are giving voice to the voiceless.
You are listening to the American Indian Movement's Honoring Song. This is Wolf Mountain Press, a documentary program focusing on Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Wolf Mountain Press will present the situations facing Indian peoples throughout the world with Native music, poetry, news, and Indian case histories, and the struggle to protect Mother Earth and the sacred ways of life of Native peoples.